I'm Carson Stooley. With me is Fangraphs Managing Editor Dave Cameron, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast. Yes, Dave Cameron, it is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast, episode 11. I believe it's episode 11. Does that sound right?
Sure, I will take your word for it.
Yeah, let's say it's episode 11. I am Carson Stooley. I am an editor at Fangraphs.com, host of Fangraphs Audio. You are Dave Cameron. You are the managing editor. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Carson. How are you doing?
Hi. What we do at the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast is to, using some of the same tools we use at Fangraphs.com, we supply objective and dispassionate analysis of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, that's right.
We should do that.
We are here because of our patrons. Our patrons are not Homeland Sports, but it is HomestandSports.com, an organization which, among other activities, facilitates the Pitch Talks events. Dave Kim, could you please explain what is a Pitch Talk event? Pitch Talks event.
It is a gathering of baseball fans in a particular city to talk about their local team, often with writers, broadcasters, sometimes front office personnel, other fans, bloggers, people who are funny and insightful and want to make fun of the team for 3 hours. So, in Chicago, when you're talking about the Cubs, you do a little less making fun. If you go to San Francisco, you'd be doing a lot of making fun. So it depends on how your team is doing. But it's a chance to gather and meet up with like-minded baseball fans who want to talk about your team for 3 hours some kind of establishment that serves adult beverages.
Right, but not adult entertainment.
Not adult entertainment.
Characterized as adult entertainment. Yeah. In fact, there is a big Pitch Talks event occurring this evening, and it will not be really available to anyone listening today. This is of no use. However, it will illustrate the sort of star power that these events draw out. Tonight's event in particular is occurring at the Sport Gallery in Toronto, featuring Keith Law, who's just written, in addition to playing, supplying crack prospect analysis for ESPN.com, has written a book called Smart Baseball recently. He will be there in conversation with Deadspin's Lindsay Adler. They will be talking, presumably about the book and other issues. And also at that event will be a round table, a panel featuring a number of Blue Jays writers and other members of the media, including Mike Wilner, of course, who does radio for the team, Nick Ashbourne, who covers the Blue Jays, and also Shai Davidi. Shai Davidi will be there as well. Other events upcoming, there's an event in Brooklyn featuring Ben Lindbergh and Jeff Sullivan. Ben Lindbergh, of course, currently of The Ringer, also wrote, "The only rule is you got to show up.
The only rule is it has to work."
The only rule is it has to work, featuring Ben Lindbergh and not Jeff Sullivan. In that case, that was with Sam Miller as well. Jeff Sullivan, of course, writes for Fangraphs, and they do Effectively Wild. They do the Effectively Wild podcast together.
Right. They'll do a live version of that podcast in Brooklyn, and that should be a fun show.
Right, and that is August 7th. Yeah. That is August 7th, the Bell House. That's at 7 p.m. in Brooklyn, as I say. There's a Pitch Talks in San Francisco coming up. That'll be September 18th. That's Monday, and that features, among other characters, Bobby Evans, who is the GM of the San Francisco Giants, Grant Brisby, who, of course, writes for McCovey Cove, McCovey Chronicles, and Eno Saris.
Yeah. You can ask them all, what the hell has gone wrong?
What the hell has gone wrong? Now, you mentioned that it's making fun. I assume also for teams that are doing poorly, there is a sense of pleasure being able to commiserate.
Yeah,
right?
It's therapeutic to get together and be like, why did we watch this all year?
Yes, right. We've wasted our lives.
Yeah.
Now allow us to make ourselves...
Did you also waste your life? I feel good that I did not do that in isolation.
Yeah, that's right. Now, of course, you grew up as a Mariners fan, so you've had plenty of time
wasted
to
many lives.
Participate. But there is as far as I could tell, there's a fairly tight community of Seattle Mariners fans out there.
There are, yeah. People really like to bond over misery.
They do. I think that actually explains New England, for example. People have been here since Pilgrim showed up with buckle hats to the state in which I live, and yet people continue to live here for reasons unknown.
Well, anyway, the lobster.
We have just discussed some Pitch Talks events that are coming up. Tickets are available, as well as more information, not at homelandsports.com, which is a patriotic sports website, but at homestandsports.com. Ticket information there. Now let us move on to some objective dispassion analysis of the Toronto Blue Jays. Way we typically begin this, Dave Cameron, to just talk about the team's record since we last spoke. Of course, we did not broadcast last week between, I think you had surgery. I had a family event to which I needed to attend. So it has been 2 weeks, and over that time, the team, which I guaranteed in the title of the most recent episode, would reach 500. Well, I lied because they fell one, at their best, they were one game short. They went 5-7 in the meantime, which brings them to something less than 500 at the moment.
Before we get to that, would you have rather had surgery than hang out with your family?
It's interesting that you say that question, Dave Cameron. Can I not answer? Can I answer off the air?
Sure, right? Yeah. We'll take your answer off the air.
All right.
I believe that is the answer that everyone else
can. I mean, can you just imagine, even if they were exactly like me, you can imagine how annoying that would be.
I could not handle more than one of you.
Right. Okay. So that would be a problem. All right. Let's move on to how the. So as I say, 5-7, not the ideal performance for which the teams were looking. Looking at the WAR figures, this wins above replacement over the past couple weeks, what is revealed here is that the Blue Jays have produced the 22nd best team WAR, position player WAR, so slightly worse than average. The pitchers have been slightly better than average at 12th, which suggests to me that if there has been a slide, it's maybe been more attributable to the hitting than the pitching, although that seems to be a generalization. What, looking further into things, Dave Cameron, what can you tell us about what has happened in the last 2 weeks?
Well, Josh Donaldson stopped hitting for power, which is a key component to the Blue Jays winning games. Is Josh Donaldson, what I believe he says, elevate and celebrate. He has done very little elevation and almost no celebration. So when Josh Donaldson's not hitting and Kevin Pillar's not hitting and, you know, the team's left fielder is Dwight Smith, your offense is probably not going to be that good. And so this is already a defense that had some problems. They needed to outscore their opponents. The pitching was, you know, fine-ish, but not always fine. They had some rough starts from Marcus Stroman and Marco Estrada and Joe Biagini. So when you're not scoring runs and those guys are giving up runs, that's a bad combination.
You know, you mentioned let's return to Josh Donaldson briefly. Of course, he has become at some level the face or one of the faces on the Mount Rushmore of flyball revolution. A brief examination of his numbers, however, realizes or suggests that he does not actually record distinctly lower than average ground ball rates. They're sort of in the, you know, the low 40s area, and I think league average is around 44 or 45 usually. Is there another way that he's producing power besides hitting just fly ball after fly ball? Because he hates hitting the ball on the ground, and yet he does it at a roughly league average rate.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a limit to which you can swing up, especially when pitchers are going to try and pitch you out of power zones. So if they're routinely trying to pitch you in areas where it's hard for you to hit for power, you can only do so much to counter that plan. So if you're a guy with monstrous power like Josh Donaldson, at some point you just have to accept, like, yeah, I'm going to hit some ground balls because of where they're pitching me.
You know, that's interesting. I think Travis Sochik, who writes for Fangraphs, he's done a number of pieces on this sort of fly ball trend in the majors. And I think in reply to one of the criticisms or against the existence of the fly ball revolution is that maybe league-wide ground ball rates haven't changed that much. However, in addition to hitters trying to hit the ball in the air more often, I think pitchers have resorted to ground ball heavy pitch mixes more than they have in the past too. Does that sound right?
That was true of the last, say, 5 years. Okay. I think pitchers moved more towards sinkers and pitching down in the zone, and that was one of the things that probably has instigated players to change. So now as everyone's trying to swing up to hit these pitches at the bottom of the zone and finding success, the move more this year is more away from two-seamers, more four-seamers, more curveballs, pitching up at the top of the zone and trying to go high fastballs, low curveballs. That seems to be the trend of the day.
Yeah, and I think that's what allowed Rich Hill, of course, the Dodgers previously of the...
of all the teams.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But most recently Oakland and then before that Boston for like a four or five start. That was sort of what put him back on the map. He is all curveballs and high fastballs, but I think he's actually had a poor season this year. So is that a strategy doomed for failure too, or is that just one data point?
I mean, everything is just, right? So, like, as pitchers begin to pitch more fastball curveball heavy and they pitch up in the zone with fastballs, hitters will adjust and they will change their swing plan again and they will This is a giant game of cat and mouse that hitters and pitchers are constantly playing. The current balance is towards hitters swinging up and pitchers trying to exploit that by pitching up. But then hitters will say, well, they're pitching up, so let's swing more level, or let's stop swinging those pitches up, or whatever it may be, and there will be another change in the future.
So Josh Donaldson has hit only like 50% of league averages over the last 2 weeks. Kevin Pillar has only been about 60% average, and of course he had been hitting quite well for some time. Jose Bautista was only merely league average in the last couple of weeks. On the one hand, you can identify the reasons that a team has played poorly over a certain stretch, and if in going 5-7. That's not ideal it's only one game off 500, obviously, but at the same time, this is a team that needs to be playing at above 500. And I think that their schedule over those 2 weeks was not actually the toughest 2 week stretch that they'll face. We've identified the problem. Is there a reason for that, or are we merely in the land of, random variation at this point?
Yeah, but over any two-week stretch, you're going to have some players play well, some players play poorly. You can't expect everyone to click on all cylinders at all times. But I think what has continued to be revealed throughout the season is that the Blue Jays don't have enough good players, right? So, like,
okay, yeah,
if Josh Donaldson going in the toilet sinks your offense, that's a problem. Like, Justin Smoke's having a nice year, and Kendrys Morales has been okay, and Jose Bautista's been okay. But, like, this was supposed to be, and has been for the last few years, a lineup that, like, one guy slumps, and that's okay. We got six more. This is no longer that kind of offense, right? So, like, the Blue Jays are short a couple of hitters, and they're probably short a couple of pitchers, and this is, you know, it's a good enough team to dig out of the early hole, but in terms of, like, looking at, you know, the Astros, the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Nationals, like, the best teams in baseball, the Blue Jays probably are a few players short.
Right, and now we talked about randomness, two-week stretches, and you noted also that Marcus Stroman has not been particularly good. Really by any measure over the last couple of weeks. But he's still striking guys out, not walking too many. That has to be, you have to say, if you're looking for promising signs for, you know, the near future, that at least if he's recording strong indicators, that has to be better than not having done that, I guess, and allow the same number of runs.
Yeah, I mean, you'd prefer that your struggles come kind of on the home run ball, because that's got more variance to it. Like, sometimes balls will go over the wall, sometimes they won't, sometimes wind's blowing in. You know, home runs are a little bit more out of a pitcher's control than walks and strikeouts. So as long as you're not walking guys and striking guys out, you'll probably be fine long term. Obviously, if you just give up a whole bunch of home runs, that's bad for your short term.
Right. Now, in terms of where this places the team, they remain at this point in last place, but last place right now in the AL East means only being five games out, which does not appear insurmountable. Certainly mathematically not insurmountable, but teams have obviously come back from that. They're three games below 500. However, our projections at Fangraphs project them to be quite a bit better than that over the course of the season. They're supposed to finish up two games over 500, so that would be five games over 500 for the rest of the season. That places them, that gives them actually some chance, a not unreasonable chance, about a 20% chance still of making the divisional series. Is it, where do they, and this is something we, of course, continue to monitor, where do they place now sort of on the scale of buying and selling as we approach the trade deadline?
I mean, I think they're probably still bubble team leading towards buyer. I think they want to buy. They want to, you know, be in the postseason. This is an older team built to win now, so they're not going to sell unless they have to. If the next month goes really poorly and they go 10-20 or something, perhaps they'll sell. But I think right now they're probably looking at it and saying, we're close enough to at least talk ourselves into buying, assuming things go well between now and July 31st.
You know, no team right now in the AL East is expected to reach the 90-win threshold. And I don't know, is that the conservatism of the projections, or is that because they're all sort of, I think, what's the term, beating each other up?
Yeah, but I think I would say no team individually is expected to get to 90 wins. Like, at the beginning of the year, you'd say, like, I wouldn't project any individual player to hit more than 40 home runs, but I'm pretty sure that someone will, and it's kind of the same thing, right? It's like, out of these five teams, someone will win 90-plus games. I wouldn't look at any of them and say, this team will win 90-plus games.
Let me ask a question. Our second half, so obviously leading up to around the trade deadline or this time of year, teams are just sort of, they're playing their games. You know, they do that for the first 2 or 3 months of the season, and then they assess where they are, whether they should buy or sell or hold, et cetera. Now, say at the trade deadline, you have certain teams that are buying to improve their roster, right? Because they believe they're within, you know, within earshot of the, you know, they're going to be in postseason contention. Other teams realizing that they have no chance of contending are selling off some of their best players, you know, short-term assets for longer-term ones. Do win-loss records in the second half, do they tend to be more polarized? The best teams putting up better records and the worst teams putting up worse ones?
Yeah.
Or do you know the answer?
Yeah, you have stratification, especially after August 1st.
You do? Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. All right.
Yeah, so it was like the best teams improve, and the worst teams, especially the worst teams, get a lot worse, right? It's like if you're a mediocre team and you trade your three best players and you promote guys from AAA to replace them, that's going to be a substantial difference. And so it's harder for a good team to get substantially better as much as the bad teams can get substantially worse. But you do have a stratification where the August, September, especially in September when you have the September call-ups, there's a bigger gap between teams than there is in July.
Now, I do know that you've written before about the advantage that some clubs have if they have one glaring hole as opposed to sort of, you know, decent but not great or terrible players at every position. Because if you address that one weakness, then you get essentially a maximum return in terms of added wins. Are the Blue Jays in that type of situation, or are they more sort of like sort of spread out with their quality?
Yeah, I mean, they are in that situation probably at left field, where Ezekiel Carrera is hurt and Steve Pierce is an unknown quantity right now and probably can't be relied on as an everyday guy. So there you could look at and say, we've got a pretty big hole in left field. So there's a spot where if you could get a real major league left fielder, you could add a significant gain. Potentially at second base too, although Ryan Goins has some value just with his glove. But left field is probably the one spot where you can say, yeah, we've got like a kind of scrub position here. We can make a big gain. I think on the pitching side, it's harder, right? Like you could replace Francisco Liriano, but he's not a disaster, and the quality of starting pitcher you're going to get to replace him isn't that much better. You could, you know, get a starting pitcher who's maybe better than Joe Biagini and move Biagini back to the bullpen, but, you know, the bullpen's been fine, and, like, Biagini hasn't been good the last couple weeks, but he was pretty good before that. How much better than Biagini is a starting pitcher going to get? Like, these are the kinds of guys that are a little harder to upgrade on.
Yeah, okay. Now, this is this is the time of the program when I will talk at length and bore you about a somewhat obscure prospect in the Toronto Blue Jays system, Dave Cameron.
Okay.
So that's going to occur right now.
All right.
But I'm actually going to cite a player that I've discussed before. This will be a status update on catcher Danny Jansen. Does that name sound familiar to you at all? Dan Jansen?
I believe he competed in, like, the 88 Olympic Games with
Dan
O'Brien.
This guy was actually born in 95. So,
okay, wow. So it's, -7 was pretty young for his age.
Moot point. The player is Danny Jansen. He is... He's a catcher he's a former 16th round pick out of a high school in Wisconsin. He's essentially on the offensive side of the game. He is essentially like the prototypical fringe prospect. He makes a lot of contact. He does take a certain number of walks, and he has actually reasonable power. This is promising. The difficulty, of course, comes with his position, which is catcher. On the one hand, catchers, of course, benefit from an excellent positional adjustment when you're figuring something like wins above replacement. Really, if you can get any offense at a catcher, that's going to be a good catcher. The problem is, if you're talking about developing players, whether they will be able to remain at the position. Because after catcher, and maybe you could point to, I don't know how many exceptions you could point to, but usually if a player does not stick at catcher, he moves to first base, and that's it.
Yep.
I don't know. There are exceptions. Josh Donaldson, of course, was a catcher. At least in the minor leagues, I think he'd actually played he played in the field as a collegiate player. Craig Biggio went from catcher to second base. But these are really exceptions that prove the rule. Jansen's defensive metrics have continued to be subpar. So this is partially the cause for the status update. Danny Jansen, because of his position, because of his offensive skills, is quite enticing. However, at least so far as the metrics are concerned, the defensive skills are still not particularly great. In roughly 100 plate appearances now at AA, to which he was promoted last month, he's recorded -4 runs as a catcher, according to Clay Davenport's methodology. And according to Baseball Prospectus's methodology, he's recorded about negative three runs between. About an even number of runs, but it's negative one run at catcher. Comes out to, you know, something only slightly better than average defense, but probably not enough to withhold the bat. So that is the status update on catcher Danny Jansen in the Toronto Blue Jays system, Dave Cameron.
I think I would have rather heard about the Olympian from the 88 games.
Okay. Now, let us move on to the week ahead. Dave Cameron, of course, this is a weekly program, so we typically talk about things in the form of weeks. We have two series approaching here. The team is off on Monday, but then they will play host to Baltimore and then to Boston, two teams which are in the AL East and are ahead of the Blue Jays because every team in the AL East is ahead of the Toronto Blue Jays. But again, a tight race, that is. They will face a Baltimore Orioles club. Will you give us a brief assessment of where that Orioles club currently stands?
If you think the Blue Jays are struggling, imagine being an Orioles fan. I think they've allowed something like 7,000 runs in the last 20 innings pitched.
Seems poor.
Their starting rotation is currently like a blue crab that was caught and left out in the sun for a few hours. Some cast member from The Wire. Like, this is basically what they're throwing out on the mound every few days. The Orioles can hit, but their pitching is atrocious. Mm-hmm. You should score a lot of runs.
Right, and I will say that for each of the three games, according to the projections at least, the Blue Jays have at least a 55% chance of winning. That is, the three pitchers it appears as though they'll see are Kevin Gausman, who's been good at times, right? He's looked like an ace at times. Okay, right, so not this year. Wade Miley, who's been aggressively average for much of his career.
And worse than that this year.
Worse than that this year. And then Ubaldo Jimenez,
who's maybe the worst running pitcher in baseball.
Is that true? Is that
he might be the worst pitcher with a stellar rotation spot, yeah.
And I believe at points last year, certainly by the end of the season, he was no longer part of the
Orioles. Yeah, they bumped him to the bullpen a few times, but then they keep being like, well, we need someone to throw five really terrible innings, and you're our guy.
Didn't they give almost exactly that type of pitcher to the Mariners this offseason?
Yeah, Giovanni Gallardo. Yeah.
Yeah. It actually seems... pitching has not been a strength for these Orioles. I should say, starting pitching has not been a strength for these Baltimore Orioles, and yet they've managed to make the postseason a few times over the last few years.
Yeah, they're running out of magic.
Okay, so it's not, they haven't discovered some sort of inefficiency. And it doesn't matter. Who
have crappy starters is not their goal.
The Blue Jays will counter with Joe Biggini, who, as you said, some trouble of late, but decent overall. Marcus Stroman, who, as you have said, some trouble of late, decent overall. And Jay Happ, no trouble of late. Actually pitched quite well, and he'll face Ubaldo Jimenez. Chances of winning that game close to 61%, say the numbers from the computer. Next in is Boston, Boston Red Sox. They face, and this, give me a quick assessment of the Boston Red Sox.
They're good.
Okay, well done. Although their offense, I think, is...
It's struggling a bit, yeah.
Right.
Dustin Pedroia doesn't have his power. Mookie Betts isn't hitting quite as well as last year, and they have a hole at third base.
I was going to say a Pablo Sandoval-sized hole. That's too big to fill.
Yeah, they would like to have a smaller-sized hole.
Right, and we'll see if they... They do have a promising prospect, third base prospect at AA right now, who's hitting quite well there, I believe. Rafael Devers.
Correct.
Do you suppose it's a matter of time, Dave Cameron?
We'll see him this year, I think, yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah. They will begin the series by facing a pitcher who they only recently signed and who's played with at least two clubs this year, and that's Doug Fister.
And they claimed him off waivers after the Angels weren't going to add him to their major league roster, and Fister used his opt-out. So then the Red Sox were like, we'll take you.
Fister, I think, actually provided technically a quality start in his debut. I think it was 3 earned runs in 6 innings, and it was similarly adequate in terms of the indicators.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
Is there a way, because he's been good within the last few years.
He used to throw 90, now he throws 85.
Okay, and the suggestion is that's not adequate.
Yeah.
But he's always depended on a very good changeup, hasn't he?
Yeah, and his curveball used to be better than it is. When you throw 85, it's hard to have good off-speed stuff because your off-speed stuff is your fastball.
Right, yeah. And I assume that having arm speed helps with things like spin rate, et cetera. Is that right?
Yeah,
okay. So that's going to hurt that. After that, they face a very different sort of pitcher in Chris Sale, who I think it would be hard. to argue that he's not a top three starter in the majors right now, right?
Yeah, he's the best pitcher in the American League.
Okay, right. Is he the AL's Clayton Kershaw? Is that fair?
Yeah, he's not quite as good as Kershaw, but he's as good as Max Scherzer.
That's right. Max Scherzer is quite good, too, isn't he? Are those the best three starters in baseball right now?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, all right. And they will also face Drew Pomeranz, who they acquired last year from San Diego. Drew Pomeranz is actually pitching quite well.
Yeah, he throws 120 pitches in four innings, but he doesn't give up a lot of runs, and he strikes a lot of guys out. So, as long as you don't want a guy to work deep in the game, he's your guy.
And I suppose, what, if he's the team's fourth or fifth starter,
yeah,
then they'll accept that?
Yeah.
He's very strong on a per-inning basis. Presumably the sort of pitcher a team would love to have for the postseason, where the length of appearances does not matter so much as being good on a per-inning basis.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the kind of guy you necessarily want to start in game one of the postseason, but if he's your fourth starter and you're going to bullpen the game that one anyway, then it's not such a bad thing to have.
Okay, all right. And so that's the week of the Blue Jays counter with Marco Estrada, who has had difficulties of late, been good before that, which is true, of all these pitchers. Francisco Liriano, who has provided a slow and steady dose of fineness, right?
Yeah, mediocrity.
Adequacy? Mediocrity?
Mediocrity.
Acceptable mediocrity. And Biagini once again. So looking at the week, it does seem as though there are more chances for wins than losses. Getting back to 500 again, though, would seem to be unlikely. It would require over six games. It would require a 5-1 record, Dave Cameron.
Yeah, probably
it would
not
require
happen.
Five wins in the next six.
Probably not happening.
No, probably not happening. But theoretically, they could crawl closer to contention. Hey, Dave Cameron.
Yeah.
I think that completes the episode.
Okay.
How does that sound?
Sounds like we forgot to talk about Roberto Osuna.
Oh yes, let's do talk about Roberto Osuna very briefly, which is not at all the amount of time that ought to be afforded to him.
Yeah.
We'll call this an addendum or a coda, or I think is how it's referred to in music, maybe. Roberto Osuna, of course, went to... Well, would you please summarize it?
So, Roberto Osuna, excellent pitcher for the Blue Jays, having another excellent year. As of late, he has told the team that he feels disoriented, I don't think is the exact word he used, but maybe just a little lost and anxious, and so he's been dealing with some mental health issues. To their credit, the Blue Jays actually acknowledged that this was a mental health issue. This is the day and age of Major League Baseball where teams just make up injuries all the time, and it, like, often flu-like symptoms is code for a guy went and got hammered and partied too late last night, and teams aren't always forthcoming in what's actually going on with their players. In this case, I'd like to say kudos to the Blue Jays for acknowledging, like, hey, a professional athlete who's performing at a very high level and having success and isn't, you know, struggling on the field is going through some stuff in his personal life, and that's okay. He's a human being. People do that, and we support him, and kudos to the Blue Jays for shining a light on this and not sweeping it under the rug.
Yeah, I suppose for better or worse, it would be easier to do, and I suppose it draws more attention to the problem when the player is actually, when he's actually performing quite well, right?
Right.
I mean, as you know, Roberto Osuna has been quite good this year.
Yeah.
And the fact that... this is not to be. This is not like a performance-related situation. It's simply the fact that one's moods, or probably something more profound than that, one's general perspective of the world can be altered by things other than, you know, how well he or she is performing at work. This seems to be a particular case of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice for the Blue Jays to acknowledge, like, success on the field does not necessarily translate to happiness off the field or, a lack of challenges in your day-to-day life. And I think we've seen a lot of players who've, you know, potentially said, hey, I'm just struggling with stuff because, you know, I'm in a slump because of some off-the-field issue that's often raised where, you know, I'm going through a divorce or, you know, my child's sick or something along those lines. But we haven't seen too many teams be like, yeah, this player's playing well, and despite that, he's just having some challenges in his life. So congratulations to the Blue Jays for being forthcoming about that and giving Osuna the time he needs to handle the more important aspect of life, which is real life.
Yeah. Real life, challenging enough.
Yeah. Even when you're good at your job, that isn't always enough.
Yeah, I can only speak from someone who's merely mediocre. Well, how'd you categorize Francis Galeri on his performance?
Yeah, acceptable mediocrity.
Yeah, that's what I'm more accustomed to. Yeah, but anyway, you're right. Well done. Okay, Dave Cameron, I think now we have concluded. We addressed, again, devoted too little time to Roberto Osuna. Hope he finds the treatment that he needs. And once again, yes, it does appear that the Blue Jays have done everyone a service by being forthcoming about it.
Maybe listening to that 3-minute diatribe about Danny Jansen will cheer him up.
Dave Cameron, thank you very much for joining the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.
You're welcome.
That has been Dave Cameron, managing editor of Fangraphs. I'm Carson Sestouli, and this has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.